I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, further proof that leftists will always put America last. Plus, a Washington man charged with threatening to kill President Trump and wear his skin as a mask. And Democrats in Washington state pass a massive new budget as the state careens towards the economic cliff. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We will be talking a little bit about Iran today. I know that's not necessarily the topic that you watch this show to hear about, but we'll have some thoughts on that. We're going to hear from Congressman Michael Baumgartner, a Republican, momentarily, and then later on in the week, we'll hear from the Democratic argument, Congressman Adam Smith of our state. But I have to start with this idea of America first versus America last, right? There are some conservatives, and I think reasonable people, right, left, and center, can question whether the attacks on Iran are in America's interest, whether it's worth the deaths of American service members. I don't really mind having those conversations whatsoever. But this idea that, oh, it's not America first, like President Trump says, to get involved in Venezuela and to get involved in Iran. Yet, I think we don't point out that, let's say that's not America first. Let's say it's America second. It's still not America last. And America last is absolutely the position of a growing number of Democrats in this country. Because if Donald Trump does something as the president of the United States of America, they're automatically on the other side of it, no matter what it is, no matter the evil that he's fighting against, no matter the horrific nature of the crimes of the person who he arrests or kidnaps, I guess, the Venezuelan dictator, who he arrests or kills, like the Ayatollah. Democrats will automatically be on the other side of it. And that's immediately what happened in blue bastions around the country, is President Donald Trump went in there, killed Iran's leadership. And what did they do in Seattle? Oh, we took to the streets. We've got to take to the streets because they are every single time America last. They had an emergency rally at Pike Place Market on Saturday. Hands off Iran. These are the exact same groups, the exact same activists who accused and went and did protests because Israel was guilty of genocide and they were killing civilians in Gaza, while Iran has killed tens of thousands of its citizens. And they're like, oh, hands off Iran. So what, you can't kill the civilians in Gaza, but you can kill the civilians in Iran? It makes no sense. They have absolutely no moral compass. Their only compass is exact opposite of whatever Donald Trump is doing. It's America last. So you can argue that President Trump isn't putting America first, but he sure as hell isn't putting America last. And the American left, increasingly so, is willing to put America last if it means dunking on Donald Trump. And a lot of that is driven by the media narrative. The headlines over the death of the Ayatollah, and I saw a lot of this, comparing it to how entities like the New York Times will cover conservatives. It is no wonder that so many of these unhinged leftists literally believe that Donald Trump and Republicans are and conservatives are worse or more dangerous than someone like the Ayatollah. Here's how the New York Times covered it. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, hardline cleric who made Iran a regional power, is dead at 86. Compare that to Charlie Kirk, right-wing provocateur and close ally of Trump, dies at 31. Rush Limbaugh dies at 70. He turned talk radio into a right-wing attack machine. The media paints conservatives and Donald Trump as worse than the Ayatollah, as worse than Iran. The number one sponsor of terrorism in the world has killed an untold number of people. So it's no wonder that you get these leftists who Donald Trump does something, they have to believe that it is the opposite of what's right. So they have to absolutely go, whatever Donald Trump does, we believe in the opposite. So we could defend a dictator in Maduro, who imprisons people and kills people and helps sling deadly drugs around the world that have killed Americans. Well, because Trump, you know, took action against him. Same in Iran. And President Trump, at the end of the day, and I'll talk about my thoughts on what's happening in Iran. I have some hesitancy with it as well. But similar to what he did in Venezuela, he said this is about giving the people of Iran a real chance to change their country.
I call upon all Iranian patriots who yearn for freedom to seize this moment, to be brave, be bold, be heroic, and take back your country. America is with you.
Yeah, and I'll say it's something that they wouldn't be able to do if not for some sort of significant military intervention from a country like the United States, or probably the only country that could do it, the United States of America. And in this case, in concert with Israel. So reactions from Washington State's congressional delegation. Honestly, when it comes to the Democrats, their reaction is the same. It's boilerplate. Oh, Iran bad, but Iran bad. However, I mean, that's what basically all of them are saying on the Democratic side. Let's see. Senator Patty Murray, no war with Iran. There was no imminent threat. There's no clear objective. I will not support a war of choice that puts American lives in harm's way. She would have supported a war of choice if it had been a Democratic president. So let's be clear. Pramila Jayapal, in the dead of night, Donald Trump bombed Iran without congressional authorization. No discussion, no debate, no imminent threat. And for the record, there was discussion. The White House briefed the eight leaders on the Republican and Democrat side before it happened. She said one man's tantrum doesn't get to drag the entire country into an expensive, unconstitutional war, a war that has already cost three American lives. I believe that number is four now. We must vote immediately on a war powers resolution and force him to stop. Congressman Adam Smith of our state, who's a little less unhinged than Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, he posted a video with his reaction.
This was a mistake. Congress needs to get back into session as quickly as possible and correct that mistake. President Trump owes it to the American people to have an explanation for what he's doing and why. And Congress must go on the record on this incredibly dangerous operation. Again, I think we should vote it down, but at a minimum, everybody needs to be on record on something this important.
Yeah. And look, you want to talk about mistakes. I mean, Obama giving $1.7 billion in cash to Iran, probably a mistake. Obama drawing a red line and then letting Iran walk over it with no consequences at all, probably a mistake. So I'm open to having conversations about what President Trump is doing in Iran. What's the end game? What does it look like? How long will it take? But let's not act like this whole thing, and we're going to talk to Congressman Baumgartner momentarily. You know, I'm so sick of the whole war powers debate. Both sides do this. Both sides do this where it's like a president, a Democrat president, a Republican president, they'll do some sort of military action. And the other side, no matter how warranted, no matter what the enemy was, no matter the nature of the attack, they'll be like, we didn't get a say on this. And they'll go on the news and just lose their minds about it. And I was reading up, historically speaking, on, I mean, we've had a lot of wars in the United States or military actions that we've been a part of or driven in the last 100 years. And what I read is technically Congress hasn't declared a war since 1942. And so they want to act like this is this unprecedented thing. And I guess it's the difference between, are we declaring a war or are we making a targeted, are we taking a targeted military action? Anyway, Congressman Michael Baumgartner, who very much supports what President Trump is doing, a Republican representing Washington's 5th District, joins us to discuss what's next. Congressman, welcome back to Undivided.
Always great to be on the show. Thanks, Brandy.
Yeah, I know you're down in Florida right now. We'll make it quick, but obviously some significant events unfolding. I want to start with the obvious sort of push and pull that's going to happen within the Republican Party. There are, I wouldn't call it a small number of conservatives and people across the political spectrum who are very hesitant about having some sort of large military operation in Iran. Do you share any of that hesitancy?
Well, look, Iran has been at war with America for 50 years. For 50 years, Iran has been chanting death to America, and they've meant it. You know, they killed up to 1,000 Americans when I was in Iraq with the State Department. I've seen their bombs explode very close. I've known some people they've killed. Obviously, they killed Marines in the barracks in Beirut, Khobar Towers. So they've been at war with us for nearly 50 years. And there's nothing about America First that doesn't say America shouldn't protect ourselves. And so I strongly support the actions that President Trump is taking. And, you know, and I think with his leadership, we're going to have a lot of success. And you know, in terms of any divides on the Republican Party, they'll work themselves out.
Yeah. Is there a limit for you in terms of the intervention? I know the president called on the people of Iran to take their country back. I don't know the extent to which that's possible if there's not some major defections from the military infrastructure there. But I mean, would you be okay with U.S. boots on the ground in Iran if that's what it comes to?
Well, look, we're going in a step-by-step process to make sure that we protect key United States interests. And if you look at President Trump's approach, it's maximum leverage. And he's right now, we are significantly degrading their ballistic missile threat, which is step one. Step two is we put the hammer down on their nuclear program in last summer. They immediately went back to trying to rebuild that nuclear program. So we're going to continue to make sure that's disabled. And then we're going to make sure they don't have their terrorist network across the Middle East. Those are the key interests for the U.S. You know, President Trump has also stated a goal of sending the Iranian Navy to the bottom of the ocean. And remember, this is the same Navy that while President Obama was president and in charge of our armed forces, you know, this is the same Iranian Navy that took captive a group of American sailors and embarrassed and humiliated them on the world stage. That's not going to happen with President Trump. So I feel very confident in President Trump. And I'm somebody that was very skeptical of him when he came down the escalator in 2016. I thought he would be naive and foolish on foreign policy. But starting with the assassination of Iranian terrorist leader Qasem Soleimani in his first administration, what he did with the Abraham Accords, the way that President Trump's leadership has brought the hostages back from Hamas, and removing Venezuelan dictator Maduro, I think we can have a lot of confidence in Trump and Marco Rubio and Chairman of the Joint Chief Kane.
Yeah, and just to circle back to the question, are you willing to say definitively whether you would support troops on the ground in Iran?
You know, I don't think that's likely to happen. Again, we're going to look at all U.S. Security interests. But, you know, the important thing is Iran has been a persistent threat to American national security. People have to understand the true nature of the Iranian regime. This is a messianic death cult that believes that their version of Shia Islam is going to be guided by the hand of God to take over the Middle East and eventually the world. And that's what they fundamentally believe. And that's why they have been so deadly through the years. They have put billions and billions of dollars that they could have put into the economy instead of building up a terrorist network. And missiles and bombs and drones that threaten America's interests. So we absolutely have to remove that threat. And that's what President Trump is going to do.
And my last question for you is on the war powers issue. And this has come as long as I've been alive and presidents have carried out some sort of military action. The other side says, oh, you didn't ask us first. And there's this whole thing. And I imagine that if we had a Democratic president who would have struck Iran in the way that the president did, then Republicans would have said, oh, you didn't ask us first. And I'm learning a lot about the history of that. That it's been actually like almost 100 years since there was actually a war, a declaration of war that Congress voted on. It was World War II. So as a member of Congress, politics aside, what is your expectation about what a president does before they engage an enemy in any sort of military action?
Well, I want to be kept up to date, and I want to make sure that America is following the right policy. The commander in chief is following a right policy. And I'm very satisfied on both of those measures now. You know, he is following the War Powers Act. Every president, even though the Congress has passed War Powers Act, every president has held that it's not binding. It's never been tested by the Supreme Court. Certainly in our Constitution, there's a natural tension between Article 2, which says the president is commander in chief, and Article 1, which says Congress declares war. You know, and then you get lost in the details of technically what is war.
Right.
You're quite right. The Democrats are very hypocritical about this issue. None of them complained when President Obama bombed Libya in a much more dangerous situation, much less than the U.S. national interests. And so we don't take them real seriously when they have these partisan political complaints. You know, what I do want to make sure, though, is that our taxpayers and our voting citizens are ensured that I'm doing my job in Congress to make sure that we're following the right policy. And I have a lot of confidence in that. Obviously, I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East. First time I went out there was when I was in high school. I spent considerable time in Syria and Jordan. I used to work in Dubai, Saudi Arabia, was in both Iraq and Afghanistan. So I certainly have seen the Iranian threat up close and understand the importance of what we're doing now.
Yeah, and let's be fair. I mean, Republicans have been hypocritical on the sort of war powers issue as well. I mean, do you acknowledge that, like, if it's a Democrat president, Republicans want a chance to vote on it? And if it's a Republican president, Democrats want a chance to vote on it? I mean,
well, we we do vote. Congress does vote when it exercises its power of the purse, you know, and, you know, there are, you know, I've spent some time with some congressional Democrats, and sometimes they say things in private that they don't say in public. And, you know, it's been expressed to me by a pretty prominent Democrat that, look, any president in history, as in his role of commander in chief, has never been constrained in doing something he thinks is the national security interest from the U.S., yep. going all the way back to Thomas Jefferson with Barbary Pirates. Where we do get to have a say is when we authorize the budget, because the money is not there unless Congress appropriates it. So that's really the teeth that Congress has, not you know, these other provisions that can get batted back and forth. And we just had a good bipartisan budget, both Republicans and Democrats, when it comes to the Department of Defense. What we don't have funded right now is the Homeland Security budget, because mm-hmm. Democrats are playing political games, and that's making us much more dangerous here at home. You know, Democrats let in nearly 20 million people over the border during the Biden administration. There was at least 100 known people on the terrorist watch list that were released, and we know there are Iranian sleeper cells in America. So that has made us more dangerous. So Democrats need to do the right thing right now and pass that Homeland Security budget.
Yeah, very worried about that. Definitely won't be in any large crowds for the foreseeable future. But to your point, and I think this is something everybody just needs to be a little bit more of an honest broker on, there's a big difference between a strike and a war. And everybody wants to act like, oh my gosh, anytime you do something with the military, you need to go to Congress and they have to declare war. And I think that's just disingenuous. So, all right, Congressman, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Appreciate your show, Brandy. You do a great job, and the people of Washington State are lucky to have you on the beat for us.
There's Congressman Michael Baumgartner, Republican from Washington State, on what's happening in Iran. Later on this week, we will have Congressman Adam Smith, the Democratic perspective. He's the ranking member on the House Armed Services Committee. And then later in the show, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll if you support the president's actions in Iran. Here, sort of at home, I think one of my concerns, and it was reflected there, is the number of people who got across our southern border under Biden. And how many sleeper cells we have here. I mean, there was already a shooting in Texas, and that person was a naturalized citizen. But how many people do we have here laying in wait who hate our country, who were never vetted at the southern border? That was one of the primary concerns of just this massive flow that was totally unfettered across the southern border. And then, of course, if something were to happen here, and just mark my word, and I hate to say it, but if there were to be some big attack here in the name of Iran, you know, a punishing and retribution for what's happening in Iran, who are the Democrats going to blame? They're going to blame Donald Trump, even if it's someone or someone's who came across under Biden through our southern border completely unvetted. So, you know, I hope that doesn't happen, but I think the likelihood is pretty high. All right. So speaking of this whole, you know, America last and this environment that we're in, where no matter what President Donald Trump does, the left is going to hate it, and they've been conditioned. We have a couple stories in that regard coming up next. First, our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington would love for you to become a member if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state. So if you've got one unit or maybe a dozen units, RHA is Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers, and they will be in your corner to help you navigate the changing rules and regulations at the local, county, and state level regarding, you know, rental units, especially with rental control and all that. And they're down in Olympia right now, advocating on your behalf. And so I highly recommend becoming a member of RHA today. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. And once you sign up, you get alerted to all the many events they have around the state for policy discussions and otherwise. So RHAWA.org. This story is insane. And I think it touches on two things: the unhinged behavior that follows President Trump wherever he goes, and then transgender violence. Let's just be honest about what it is. You have people with these severe mental health issues that think they're a boy or think they're a girl. And I do believe that there is absolute security concern amongst so many people in that population. And we've seen that. So the Department of Justice is federally charging a man named Philip Richard Wharton, who prefers the name Miss Sadie. So it's a man that thinks they're a woman. And Philip now faces federal charges for allegedly threatening to kill President Trump on social media. A couple of the posts you see here, you might see if you're watching in that middle picture with the green hair, there's a blurred object. That's a gun that they're holding to their head, and they've got like a pill and a knife and I don't know what else that is. It says, my name is Sadie online. I am going to kill the president tomorrow. This is not a joke, but a confession admissible in a court of law. There's another post. It says, what the guy in the White House sees after I kill the U.S. president of the United States of America and wear his face as a mask. So, okay, deeply disturbed individual, and someone who thinks they're transgender. I don't believe we can bifurcate those two things. Information here from the Linwood Times. So Wharton, 20 years old, lives in Everett, was indicted on charges for threatening a federal official, which carries a potential penalty of $250,000 or imprisonment of up to 10 years. As we said, the case stems from social media posts in August and September of 2025. So the U.S. Secret Service, they basically see these concerning posts online, and they found additional social media accounts associated with the same screen name that was being used. So that's how they were able to zero in. They linked some accounts together and they zeroed in on this Philip Richard Wharton individual. So it says investigators utilized law enforcement databases to positively identify Wharton based on personal identifiers. On September 8th, 2025, federal agents attempted to contact him at his Everett address. Through a phone conversation, he agreed to meet the federal agents for a conversation. So during that conversation, Wharton confirmed that he made the posts threatening President Trump and that the social media accounts were in fact his. Wharton shared with the U.S. Secret Service agents that, quote, he made the posts because he felt angry about his belief that President Trump had been involved with sex trafficking to 14-year-olds and made reference to Trump's involvement with Jeffrey Epstein. Two agents informed Wharton of the consequences of threatening the president of the United States, to which he agreed to stop making threats. So they, like, gave him a chance, which is kind of crazy. But they gave him a chance, told him this is a very, maybe because of his age, 20 years old, they go to meet with them. They give him a chance to stop threatening the president of the United States. However, on September 23rd, approximately 2 weeks after that meeting, Wharton posted to his Instagram account the post I read to you earlier. My name is Sadie. I'm going to kill the president tomorrow. This is not a joke, but a confession admissible in a court of law. And so, you know, once they gave him the chance, he did it again. The weird posts about wearing his skin as a face mask. I mean, this is someone who needs mental health services. I definitely believe that, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be charged federally with a crime. One thing I had to point out about this, besides the obvious, like, horrific nature of it, I read the King 5 article on this, and I saw the headline, and before I even clicked on it to read the full headline, I was like, they're going to call him a girl. I was like, they're going to call him a woman, aren't they? Because how many of these news stories were some horrific crime that was committed by a man has been attributed to women everywhere because they choose to identify as a woman. The King 5 didn't do it. It says, I'm going to kill the president tomorrow. Everett man indicted on charges of online assassination threats. I couldn't believe it. I think this is the first example I've seen from King 5 News, if you're not familiar, the furthest left TV station in Seattle, of them not abiding by someone's preferred gender pronouns. The feds called him a man in the court documents, and King 5 called him a man in the court documents, despite the fact that he goes by Sadie. So I actually thought that was a win for sanity. Maybe we can get away from this insane trend of, oh, you're a serial killer? Well, what are your preferred pronouns? And we'll use those. Oh, you assassinated someone? What are your preferred pronouns? We'll use those. Because it's just, and it's always women getting the blame for men. It's like, I haven't seen any the other way around. Oh, woman shoots, rapes, whatever it is. It's like, no, a man did that. And so King 5 News, I'll give you a lot of credit for saying what is true, that this is a man who threatened to kill the president of the United States and wear his skin as a suit. Disturbing stuff. But this shows the level of vitriol that's out there about the president, and that continues to be fed. This person might be insane, but they were fed those ideas by sane people. I mean, how many mainstream network news outlets and commentators and contributors and voices online have accused the president of being a pedophile, of being a child predator, and of having some criminal culpability in the Epstein saga? A lot. And that's what this unhinged 20-year-old sees and goes out there because they're unwell and threatens to kill the president of the United States. And there's also a tie here to a story that we broke exclusively on Undivided and that we continue to update for you. The vicious attack of a 13-year-old girl at a middle school in Burlington, Washington. We have an update on this today. So this happened at Lucille Umbarger Middle School several weeks ago now. As we reported, this 13-year-old girl, her boyfriend had made kind of a joke online that he wanted to become an ICE agent. So she said, and she told the school and police, that two girls confronted her in the locker room demanding to know whether she too supported Trump and supported ICE. And when she told them it was none of their business, they brutally beat her. So we have been waiting for an update on what's going to happen to those girls. And I'm happy to report, yes, happy is in fact the word, that both were arrested and charged with assault in the fourth degree. And in fact, they had to spend a night in juvenile detention before the court released them. I'm pretty surprised by that, because I think very rarely when you have a juvenile arrested, do they have to spend the night in jail, juvenile detention. But I think for a 13-year-old, that feels just like jail. So as of right now, both of the young girls, 13 years old, who were caught on video, there's no denying it, beating this 13-year-old girl senseless, face charges of assault in the fourth degree. Burlington police sent us the police report on this incident, which confirms the story that we were told by this girl later on. Obviously, eventually, the victim and her mother came to us, showed us the video of what happened, told us it's because they demanded to know whether she supported President Trump and ICE. And that is reflected in the official police report as well. A couple things I want to point out about this report to you. So, one of the individuals who police interviewed is someone who's called a restorative justice coordinator at the school district. And this is some made up position, basically, to try to, my understanding of the position is they're supposed to prevent things like this. They're supposed to, you know, help students resolve conflicts and all of that. And obviously that didn't work here because the kids just jumped this girl. But it basically has the story as it was explained to the police by the restorative justice coordinator, and it details what happened. So basically, this girl said that she was confronted prior to PE around 8:30 in the morning. She was confronted about her boyfriend who went to a different school, supposedly being a supporter of Donald Trump and Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The victim reportedly told the girls that this was not important. It was not something to argue about. Again, that matches up with the story that she told us. They then accused her of being a Trump supporter. She again maintained this was not anyone's business. The girl then separated. The girl separated due to a class starting. So the victim went to PE after class around 9 o'clock in the morning. She was in the locker room getting ready for her next class. As she was leaving, the two girls were apparently behind her, having come into the locker room at some point while she was getting ready. And then they began assaulting her by grabbing and pulling her hair. They reportedly hit her on the back of the head. I mean, all of that is very obvious in the video. The other thing I want to point out from the supplemental police reports is the police department's very concerned about the optics of this case, which I will say I'm bothered that this is included in the report. I don't think that there's any realistic reason for it to be included in the report. For instance, it says the video was posted by Brandi Cruz, who's a local radio personality. So they wanted to point out that the video is getting a lot of attention. Whether the video got any attention at all should be irrelevant to the charges in the case. Whether I posted the video, I would hope that had I not posted the video, these girls still would have been charged with assault in the fourth degree. But I gotta say, after reading these documents, I don't think so. I think those girls would be back at school, and I don't think they would face any sort of criminal punishment at all had we not posted the video. And what is my punishment for posting the video? Well, my Facebook page is getting, you know, not taken down, but dinged by Facebook. And then it says, now there is this element where it gets into a conversation with the victim's parents. So they ask the police about, you know, the motive being, you know, possibly race related, because in the video you can kind of hear the girls call her a racist B-I-T-C-H. And so it says the officer explained to another officer that the parents were concerned based on the nature of the attack that this was considered a hate crime. And it's getting lots of media attention and becoming a race relations issue in the local community. I explained to Officer Bone to speak with Skagit Valley juvenile prosecutors on whether this incident applies as a hate crime based on the language or protected class for the statute of malicious harassment. The officer later informed him that the assault had to be motivated because of the victim's race or ethnicity and not political views. So they basically said it's not a hate crime because they have nothing in the video to prove that it was motivated based on the victim being a white girl and instead the victim supporting President Trump, which I really believe if we're going to have a hate crime statute, which I kind of don't believe in hate crime statutes, because if you assault someone, you assault someone. I don't know that it should really matter why. Because how do you prove certain things unless it's absolutely blatant? Like, to me, charge them with the act that they committed. But if we're going to have a hate crime statute, don't you think it should include perceived politics? If it's hateful to attack someone in this case, you know, like, let's say it's because she's white and they just think she's a racist Trump supporter or whatever it is. Like, is it any worse to attack someone because of who they voted for than, like, the fact that their skin is white? That's what's weird to me in it. I really do believe if you're going to have a hate crime statute, then politics, if you're targeting someone based on who they support politically or who you perceive that they voted for, then I feel like that should be a hate crime if that statute's going to be on the books. But nonetheless, those two girls spent a night in juvenile detention. They are still not back at school to the best of our knowledge, which is a good thing and would not have been possible had we not been given the video and had so many of you not shared it. And so we'll see where these charges go. My gut tells me that there's going to be a slap on the wrist for these girls, but we'll just keep the pressure up again because, according to the police report, they seem to be very concerned with the public attention around this issue. All right, coming up next, the House Democrats pushed through a big bloated budget in Washington state over the weekend, and there was some really disturbing stuff that happened on the floor during that debate, so we'll dive into all of that. First, our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com is the guy you want to call if you're looking to sell your home, and by all means, it's a huge decision. Reach out to a few real estate agents, ask them what they can offer you, get a sort of a feeling for their expertise, and I really think that you'll find that Wes Jones just has the most to offer. There's also, you know, a lock-in effect that's been happening in the housing market right now of sellers not wanting to move because they feel locked into a low interest rate. But that's cooling because nationwide more homeowners have rates above 6% than below 6%. And so we're also seeing the rates start to come down a little bit. And so that lock-in effect might be cooling. So we could see more homes hitting the market. So beyond some of the services we've talked a lot about with Wes, like the Listing Boost Concierge service, which I think is pretty cool, there are several core ways that Wes runs his business. So every listing that he puts on the market is pre-inspected. He takes a proactive approach to preparing listings, and over 90% of buyers on his listings use the pre-listing inspection. So this allows folks to waive the inspection contingency, which reduces renegotiations, repair requests, and contract fallout, etc. So if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. So despite the fact that last year, Democrats passed the largest tax increase in state history into law, they've one-upped themselves, and over the weekend, they passed a budget that includes the largest package of tax increases in state history. So they just continue to grow and grow the budget, despite the fact that over the last 15 years or so, it's already grown at 3 times the rate of inflation and 9 times the rate of population growth. They quite literally cannot help themselves. So there was a 6-hour debate on the House floor, which Republicans knew what the outcome would be. They don't have enough votes to stop Democrats from passing this bloated budget, but they tried like hell anyway. Here's State Representative April Connors, a Republican.
Gas prices are up. Grocery prices are up. Housing prices are up. And tonight's answer, grow government. Vote no.
Yeah. Vote no. They didn't. They voted yes. Joe Fitzgibbon, the House Majority Leader, who hopefully was debating the budget sober on Saturday, said this.
This budget is responsible. It is thoughtful. We know that there's more work to do. There will always be more work to do. Given where we are today, given where our economy is with tariffs, with costs pushed onto states by Congress and by the federal government.
Insane. Insane.
This is a budget that I'm proud to vote for.
I mean, he actually was complaining that they like couldn't spend more. And then, of course, they blame it on the federal government. You've been spending yourself into this deficit for years. And it didn't get any better when Biden was in office. It is so lazy, dishonest. I will say Joe Fitzgibbon made sort of a little self-deprecating jab at himself, because if you're not familiar, Joe Fitzgibbon admitted to debating the budget drunk last week, and there was a lot of media coverage around that. And so he said something about, you know, this budget isn't perfect. And he said something like, oh, well, I'm not perfect either. And I think he was referencing his, you know, foray into, I don't know, what was it, shots? I'd like to know what he was drinking. And also, in all seriousness, we're trying to figure out if he drove anywhere before, after, whatever it is. I know a lot of people have been asking that. I don't know the answer to that, but certainly we want to get to the bottom of it. But there were some Democrats who sided with the Republicans in voting against this massive spending increase and these massive tax increases. But at the end of the day, if Democrats want to do something in Olympia, they can do it. They're also pushing ahead, as you know, with the income tax. It is an income tax on millionaires today, an income tax on everyone tomorrow. So the Senate and the House have been pushing ahead with that. But remember, Governor Bob Ferguson has been telling them that he wants them, to his credit, although there's just a little bit of credit, he wants them to include simultaneously more tax breaks that will help businesses in the middle class. And it seems like he's still not happy with the latest version of the income tax on millionaires. That, according to the Washington State Standard, after the House committee approved the latest version of the millionaires tax, passed it out of committee on Friday. So it says, Washington Democrats' controversial income tax bill emerged from a state House panel Friday looking much different than when it arrived, but it hadn't changed enough to win over Governor Bob Ferguson, who said the bill still has a long way to go and raise concerns that lawmakers are running out of time to come up with an acceptable proposal. Put a pin in that, because I have some things to say about that. The House Finance Committee stripped out a proposed tax break for large companies, sped up repeal of a new sales tax on services, and eliminated the sales tax on diapers, which, by the way, was a Republican idea that now they want to take credit for. So give me a break. Ferguson said the House panel failed to funnel a significant portion of tax collections back to families and small businesses, as he's been demanding for months. Quote, the version of the bill that passed the House Finance Committee still has a long way to go to meet this moment, and I am concerned we are running out of time. So do not believe Bob Ferguson one bit. Not as far as you can throw him, which I realize he's pretty light, so some of us could probably heave him quite a distance. But this is exactly what he did last year when he said, oh, $20 million in new taxes, that's unacceptable. And then he passed $14 billion in new tax, $20 billion to $14 billion, and acted like he was the savior and the biggest budget hawk in the history of the world. It's exactly what he's doing here. Doth protest too much. He's saying, well, that's not enough tax breaks. Oh, we're running out of time. He just wants to come away looking like the good guy, like he drove a hard bargain and he got the middle class a bunch of taxes in the process, which is ridiculous. This guy passed the largest tax increase in state history within 4 months of taking office, much of that on the backs of businesses. And now he's demanding more cuts to taxes for businesses. It's absurd. So, I mean, when he says there is no way on earth, look, I would love to believe that there was a possibility that the income tax isn't going to pass this session. But there's no way Democrats are going to go out on a limb like this and not push it across the finish line. And Bob knows that. Bob has every intention in the world of agreeing with whatever ultimately comes to him. He's not going to veto it or anything like that, so don't get your hopes up. So on Sundays with Subscribers this week, we had someone who I think has been a tremendous voice in this whole debate. He's been advocating against the income tax in Olympia, former Washington State Attorney General Rob McKenna. And look, he was the Attorney General. He understands the state constitution, and his argument against this income tax is clear. It is against the state constitution.
This is not a matter of one Supreme Court opinion. It's a matter of just reading the language in the Constitution. And you'll notice those legislators always avoid doing that. They always avoid the question, how do you think income is not property? Are you telling your voters, your constituents, the taxpayers, that they don't have a property right to their income? They never, ever address that question, do they?
Yeah.
And that's because they can't. And as I pointed out in my testimony, other legislatures have been honest about it, unlike these legislators. Other legislators said, you know what? Voters approve that very broad definition of property. If we want to exclude income from it, we need to ask them to amend it. And, you know, they've been asked six times. The first time voters were asked to amend the Constitution to exclude income from that definition of property was 1934, the year after the Culleton decision.
Yeah.
And voters said no, they turned it down. They've since then turned down five other proposed constitutional amendments, plus four initiatives that were not constitutional amendments that were also defeated by big margins. So that's the fact that these legislators can't get around the fact that voters wanted a very broad definition of property, as broad as you can imagine it, to encompass all intangibles, including property or including income as a form of property. And it's an inconvenient truth for them, an inconvenient fact, right? So they're hoping that the state Supreme Court will magically conclude that, unlike all the other Supreme Court panels, unlike all the prior legislatures that have looked at this question, and unlike anyone who can read and understand English in its plain meaning, that everything tangible, intangible, subject to ownership somehow doesn't include your income, when it clearly does.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, you're going to tell me my income doesn't belong to me. And if you want to tax it, just say so. Hey, we know that your income belongs to you, but we want a piece of it. Other states take a piece of it. So just stop lying about the language in the state constitution. Try to do it the right way, which is to amend the state constitution, to ask voters to do that. And then, by all means, you know, try to pass an income tax once it's lawful to do so. You know, there'll still be an initiative run to try to repeal it or to try to undo it, and then see what happens. But genuinely, they don't care about what's legal and not legal because they packed the state Supreme Court, and they don't care what you want either. They said as much last week. I played that long clip of them basically saying they don't care how many people signed in against the income tax because they don't make their decisions based on what you tell them you think or how many constituents of theirs push back against a policy they're pursuing. And this is the consequence of one-party rule. When you have one party in control of everything for last 25 years and, well, most of the last 25 years in the governor's office for 46 years, they don't care if what they're doing is legal. They've packed the court. They have control of everything. There's like no electoral consequences for them because Donald Trump bad. So they don't care if it's legal. And they're so bold that they will sit there and they will tell you, oh, I don't care if you're against this. We don't care what citizens, a million citizens could tell us they're against the income tax and we just don't care because they don't. But let me tell you something delicious that happened. Is it delicious? I mean, I kind of know. Yeah, yes, it is delicious. So when this income tax had its first public hearing over on the Senate side, one of the first testifiers, and I was in the room when this happened, was this guy who came up and said that he was a millionaire and he was more than happy to pay this tax.
My name is Jed Fowler, and I am someone who would pay the millionaire tax. And I'm here in support of 6346. I am the president of H.D. Fowler Company, a fourth-generation family business that employs over 400 Washingtonians across the state. Being in construction supply, the company, the employees, our customers flourish when there are two things: a robust middle class purchasing newly built homes and steady investment in our public infrastructure. My marginal tax rate is not on that list. Fixing our upside-down tax code, however, does drive that shared prosperity because investing in our communities is fundamentally pro-business. A business can only be as strong as the community it serves. It's better to grow the pie than to fight about slicing it. I'm willing to pay this tax. I should pay this tax. Others like me should pay this tax. And I urge you to pass 6346. Thank you.
Oh, what a gracious millionaire. What a gracious millionaire. And after, the media loved that. Of course they did. Oh my gosh, every media outlet featured him and his testimony, and this millionaire isn't opposed to an income tax on millionaires. What a great guy. Well, now he's apologizing for that. We broke this news over the weekend. So he had been chairman of the board for H.D. Fowler Company. So it's a family company. His name's Jed Fowler. And H.D. Fowler Company is a Pacific Northwest-based construction supply company. And he sent out a letter to customers who basically, big customers who get these construction supplies from his company. And it said, H.D. Fowler customers, early in February, I spoke on behalf of the proposed millionaire tax in Washington state. My advocacy came from a narrow point of view, my own. After several humbling and informative conversations with my team and our industry partners, I realized this apology is needed. I caused you to doubt the value of our relationship, and I'm sorry for carelessly damaging that by being disconnected from your challenges and concerns. To put that in layman's terms, like, customers were like, are you kidding me? We're not doing business with you because you're going to hurt us personally and our businesses if this millionaire's tax passes and you don't seem to give a damn about that. He said, after discussions with my family and senior H.D. Fowler leadership, I'm stepping down as chairman of H.D. Fowler Company effective immediately. Hod Fowler will be stepping back in as chairman. I will report to Hod in my role as president. So he's still remaining president of the company. He's just not going to be chairman of the board. It says, these actions will help me refocus my leadership on the foundation of H.D. Fowler U. Blah, blah, blah. It's long past time for me to hear from you directly. I'm going to come meet with you. Blah, blah, blah. I think what happened is their sales plummeted. I think that they had all these big buyers of their construction equipment, and they said, we're not going to do it anymore because you're saying that we ought to be taxed and it's going to tax me out of business. And they had to do this. Now, does it, first of all, I find it hilarious. And I also wonder, though, I think this is about putting a Band-Aid on the situation because he's still going to be president of the company. So it's not like he's leaving and he's out of a job. He's just not going to be chairman. So he's still going to be president. We'll see if that's enough to fix these relationships. But it shows you, I mean, this is so poorly thought out. The consequences of this are going to be clear. And this is a guy who helps run a multi-million dollar company, is a millionaire himself. And he didn't realize that taxing millionaires, which means taxing the pass-through revenue and profit for small business owners, would probably impact all these businesses that his company works with and does business with. Like, he wasn't smart enough to realize that until people started to call and tell him. He hadn't thought that through. I think it's just indicative of what's happening with this debate in Olympia. It's all ideological. Oh, doesn't this sound nice? Oh, let's tax the rich people. And none of them think it through. And they just push it along. He didn't think it through. He showed up with his little scarf given to him by SEIU. Oh, I'm a union guy, you know. No, he's not a union guy. He doesn't belong to the union. He's a millionaire who owns a construction supply company. And he's like, wow, I am so woke and amazing, and I should be taxed. And then he has to turn around and realize that that is a very unpopular position that is going to hurt his business and hurt the people who does business with him. Just crazy. Absolutely insane. All right. So there was something that happened during the budget debate on the floor of the House over the weekend that should sicken every single one of you. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to get involved this legislative session. So when a budget bill package basically comes to the floor for a vote, often there's a ton of amendments that happen. And for Republicans, that process is very important because Republicans are basically sidelined when it comes to crafting the budget. Democrats don't care what Republicans want in the budget. They don't care what they think because they don't need their votes in order to pass it. And so what Republicans will try to do at the last minute is put forth amendments to get things into the budget or out of the budget that they've so far failed to get any traction on. Now, Republicans don't necessarily believe that's going to lead anywhere, but sometimes it's about making a point. Sometimes it's about forcing Democrats to vote against something that they know publicly will not look good for Democrats to vote against. Because a lot of these efforts that Republicans undertake in the various committees, the public doesn't see that. There's not a vote where every single member of the House has to actually say yay or nay. And so some of these ideas that Republicans have just sort of disappear. So this is about accountability. So there was an amendment introduced by State Representative Josh Penner, a Republican from Ording. And he brought forth an amendment that would have added funding to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families specifically for the purpose of trying to help rescue at-risk children and babies from homes where there's substance abuse. Here he is.
$42.9 million in lawsuits related to dead children, dead and dying children. Some of those children are still alive, but some of those children were beat to death because of the imminent physical harm standards in this budget. They were beat to death by hammers. They were smothered by their parents. They found pills and swallowed pills and died. Madam Speaker, the amendment before you takes some of the standards of House Bill 1092 and applies it so that way the imminent physical harm standard doesn't create a barrier for caseworkers and social workers that are working through these situations.
So this is one last effort to try to save kids. And remember, this has been going on all session and really all last session as well, where we have this law in the state that makes it very difficult for a judge to remove a child from a home where the parents or the caretaker are abusing deadly drugs. And because Democrats are so soft on crime, because they want to be so soft toward drug abusers, they're more than happy to just let kids die. And the numbers from the state show this, that since this imminent harm standard was in place, the number of kids who are dying or almost dying because they come into contact with some deadly drug in the home has skyrocketed. It is very sad. It's a real problem. Even Attorney General Nick Brown, a Democrat, has recognized that this is a real problem, but Democrats simply refuse to do anything about it. So this was a last-ditch effort during the budget debate, out in the open, where everybody's going to have to vote on this to say, let's pass this amendment. And Josh Penner wasn't the only one who gave very hard to listen to, but very emotional remarks. Here's some other Republicans.
I can't read about a formerly told dying because of a fentanyl overdose. I don't want to do that. We shouldn't be doing that. This has nothing to do with politics. This has to do with the lives of these tiny, sweet, perfect, innocent little babies.
When I was 10, that's when my stepfather came into my life. And in fifth grade, I got my first black eye from him. And you know what the state did? They had him sign a piece of paper that he wouldn't hit me again. And the kids at school will make fun of me and say, Michelle, you keep getting into fights. And yet, we got more services.
This has to stop. I'm not willing to accept a promise. We're not going to promise. This is today. What is today? February 28th, 2026? We get to fix it now, and it is our responsibility to do that. I'm asking you to add this amount to the budget so that we can go home and say we've saved some lives. Otherwise, 1 year from today, there's going to be another 100 babies dead.
These were lives taken by our laws, Madam Speaker, because the social workers are begging, please do something about this. This subject makes me want to crawl out of my own skin, Madam Speaker, and we don't have any more time.
Yeah, really emotional, not a made-up issue, an issue even Democrats in the Department of Children, Youth, and Families recognize their own data. The Attorney General recognized this is a real issue. Kids are dying. Republicans have tried to fix it all session. They tried to introduce bills. They tried to debate in committee. Nothing. One last effort. Bring it up on the floor. Force a vote on it. Here's how that vote went.
The speaker's about to lock the roll call machine. The speaker has locked the roll call machine. The clerk will take the record.
Madam Speaker, there are 44 yeas, 49 nays, 5 excused.
The amendment is not adopted.
How do you make sense of that? Why? All this money, the money they wanted to allocate to do this, tiny little bit, negligible. They're spending, in fact, I'll say, they spend more money giving sex change surgeries to prison inmates in Washington state than they were going to spend trying to help make sure babies don't die from drug overdoses in the home. But here, this makes it even worse. So as all of this is happening, as Republicans are in tears, sharing stories about babies dying, being beaten with hammers by drug-addicted parents, sharing stories of their own physical abuse as children, State Representative Julia Reed, a Democrat from Seattle, is on Blue Sky, where all the liberals go to air their grievances. And she's complaining about having to listen to those Republicans during that debate. She wrote, okay, time to vote off the House budget bill. She said, I'm going to be a yes on the bill. And she's giving a play-by-play. Starting off, the 20-plus Republican amendments on this bill. Since Republicans don't have the ability to stop the budget bill, this debate is their chance to air their grievances, conspiracy theories, and try to force us into disingenuous roll call votes that they can clip to make us look bad. She goes on to complain, unfortunately, the three-minute rule doesn't kick in until Monday, so we have to listen to up to 10 minutes of the most lurid Republican talking points you could imagine per speaker. Current Republican speaker, who previously said she was totally fine with immigrants being rounded up, says that it is our job to take care of the most vulnerable and babies. Almost suggesting that because Republicans don't want to take care of immigrants, they're not going to take care of babies. Then she says, screaming into your microphone just isn't the way to get your point across. But this Republican speaker definitely loves this style, referring to, I'm pretty sure, Representative Travis Couture, who you heard there passionately arguing that we shouldn't let children die. And Representative Julia Reed, a Democrat, is saying how horrible it is that she has to sit there and listen to it. How horrible it is that he's screaming into a microphone because he's angry kids are dying. How lurid it is, these Republican talking points. How it's simply a chance for Republicans to air their grievances, conspiracy theories, and try to force us into disingenuous roll call votes to make us look bad. You make yourselves look bad. They wouldn't have to force you into a disingenuous roll call vote if you had done your job last session to protect these kids, or if you had done your job at any point this session leading up to this moment. But time and time again, you decided you were going to put drug abusers before innocent little babies. And so, yes, Republicans decided to put it to you on the House floor to make you vote. And you decided to vote against giving a minuscule amount of money, less money than you give to the Department of Corrections to get sex change surgeries for convicted killers and convicted robbers and convicted felons. And you voted against it. You make yourselves look bad. They don't have to try very hard to do that. Disgusting. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. We'll get to our segment, Unbelievable, coming up next. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing are the team that you want to call. If you really have anything that you need to be done to the exterior of your home, they can certainly help you with a new roof, new siding, exterior cleaning. That's something Mike and I like to do every spring and every fall, is just get all the crap off of our house. It really needs it right now. And so we'll have to make sure to call Valentine Roofing and schedule that very soon. And Valentine Roofing, if you do need a new roof, which can be a pretty big expense for a home owner, they can do some flexible financing options with payments as low as $159 a month and zero down. So a Valentine Roof is a roof built around your budget, and you can ask about their deferred payment options. So Valentine Roofing has been trusted across Puget Sound by thousands of homeowners since 2008. Talk to your friends and family about them as well, and make sure you call 206 Roofing for your free estimate today. 206 Roofing, and tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. With that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Yet another Washington leader virtue signaling over immigration and customs enforcement. Of course, this comes a couple weeks after the Seattle socialist mayor very proudly put up all these signs on city property. No ICE here. ICE can't use this space. As if ICE was going to use that space. I don't know. So this one bums me out because the mayor of Everett is far more sane than the socialist mayor of Seattle. But she's falling into this virtue signaling trap that we have to virtue signal our opposition to ICE and we're going to thwart them by any means necessary. And so she's put out, Cassie Franklin up in Everett, this mayoral directive 2026-1, and it details their response to federal immigration enforcement. Rather than read the directive, I'll let her explain. At last week's council meeting, she explained basically what the directive does.
As we're all aware, federal immigration enforcement is causing real fear for Everett residents. It's been heartbreaking to see the racial profiling that's having an impact on Everett families and businesses. We know there are kids staying home from school, people not going to work, or people not going about their day, dining out, or shopping for essentials. Therefore, I'm directing staff to take a series of actions that respond to immigration enforcement, informed by community partners and people with lived experience, in an effort to keep our residents safer. Today, I'm issuing a mayoral directive that covers four areas. The first, city internal policy review, training, and preparation. The second initiative of this directive is collaboration with stakeholders and business support. This effort will focus on building partnerships with community leaders, advocacy groups, and regional governments to coordinate response to immigration enforcement. Our team will promote immigrant-owned businesses, and we'll provide resources for workplace protections and Know Your Rights education. The third initiative is control and access to city property. I am directing staff to restrict federal immigration enforcement agents from accessing non-public areas of city-owned facilities without a warrant. And the fourth part of this directive is renewing our commitment to constitutional policing and best practices. We are reaffirming Everett Police Department's compliance with state law prohibiting participation in civil immigration enforcement. To be clear, we do not participate in civil immigration enforcement. I also expect our officers to intervene if it's safe to do so to protect our residents when they witness federal officers using unnecessary force.
That is the one that is unacceptable. Well, they're all crazy. I mean, gosh, where do I start? So your team is going to help immigrant-owned restaurants and businesses? Why? I mean, what does that have to do with any of this? So if you're just a regular old American business owner, you continue to be screwed over. But if you're an immigrant business owner because maybe they came into the country illegally or whatever, you're going to get like special treatment from the city. That makes no sense. We already know because of state law, it's a sanctuary jurisdiction. We already know that your police department isn't able to cooperate with ICE. I mean, that's kind of the point of sanctuary jurisdictions. We're going to recommit to constitutional policing. Were you not engaged in constitutional policing? Because if you weren't already, that's sort of a problem. But that last point there is startling. We want our officers to intervene with federal agents if we believe they're using excessive force? Who are you to say whether they're using excessive force? You might have your own policies as a local police department, but that doesn't mean that those have to be the policies of the federal government and as of federal agents. There are differences in use of force policies among local police departments in our state. So would you go into another city as an Everett cop and you're down in Seattle with your family or something and you see a Seattle police officer and you think they're using excessive force and you're going to intervene? Can you imagine the position that puts that officer in? Can you imagine the liability that puts the city in if they were to try to intervene? And you don't even, it's insane. The idea that Cassie Franklin would say that, and she's one of, this is depressing, she's one of the more sane Democrats in Washington State. That's what we're dealing with here. And she would tell officers and direct them to intervene? So you better believe ICE had something to say about this. Immigration and Customs Enforcement responding to this directive, saying Cassie Franklin, mayor of the city of Everett, Washington, escalates tension and directs city law enforcement to intervene with ICE operations at their own discretion, putting everyone at greater risk. She also directs city workers to impede ICE operations and expose the location of ICE officers and agents. Working against ICE forces federal teams into the community, searching for criminal illegal aliens released from local jails, increasing the federal presence. Working with ICE reduces the federal presence. If Mayor Franklin wanted to protect the people she claims to serve, she'd empower the city police with an ICE 287G partnership. Instead, she serves criminal illegal aliens. And so you see a lot of that partnership happening in states like Florida, for instance, and ICE is right. If you really care about community safety, having a working relationship with ICE does keep the community more safe. In her directive, she regurgitated this talking point you hear a lot from Democrats, that this is about no one in our community should ever hesitate to call 911 or reach out for assistance out of fear it could put them or their family at risk. So they always say, oh, we just want people to be able to call 911 and not be deported. Okay. That's really not what we're talking about here. We're talking about known criminal illegal aliens who have committed crimes in your jurisdiction or other jurisdictions, and cooperating with police benefits that other immigrant community that you're speaking of, who just wants to call 911 to report a crime or be the witness in an investigation. So if you can work with ICE, just like Minneapolis ended up doing, yeah, come get this person from our jail. We'll hand them over to you in a controlled environment, and you can be on your way. As I said, that would lead to fewer ICE agents in neighborhoods. That would lead to probably fewer detentions and deportations. But they've got a virtue signal at any cost. And so I believe the federal government will probably sue over this policy, because you can't have a mayor in one of the largest cities in the state of Washington directing her police officers to interfere with federal agents. It's just insane. I mean, we got to try to get Mayor Franklin on, because she's been on the show before and she's usually very sane on public safety issues. So this is a huge departure from that. Just unbelievable. All right, our daily subscriber show poll. I asked our subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X if you support President Trump's actions in Iran. Yes or no? Nicole, yay or nay? Don't give me any of this middle of the road
no,
shit.
No, I do. I think that it's been getting out of control for a while. I think that there's a lot of all of the evil that we, a lot of evil, most of the evil that we talk about has been kind of centered coming out of here, and we've treated them with, like, you know, kid gloves. And I think it's time to take care of this problem.
Well, and the Ayatollah had been on X, and I love everybody trolling his post now that he's dead. He'd been on X about, we're going to basically cripple the United States and we're going to attack them and all this stuff.
But and then, we don't worry, we're not working on a nuke.
Don't worry. And then we know that Iran had a plot to kill the president.
Yeah.
Was it before the election or right after? But somewhere in that realm when everybody was trying to kill President Trump, apparently. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, right now I support it. I reserve the right to change that if it turns into more of a prolonged situation in Iran. But, you know, as Congressman Baumgartner laid out, I mean, these are people who've chanted death to America for years and years and years and have taken steps to try to bring death to the home front.
Right.
And I think it was Pete Hegseth who said, they chant death to America, America brought death to them.
Right.
So, I mean,
well, like Trump said, I got to them before they got to me.
Right. And military casualties are always sad when they happen, but they've always been a part of war. And I know this sounds cold. We don't want them to happen unnecessarily and needlessly, but that is what men and women sign up for. Mm-hmm. And when you're engaged in the enemy in any way, and how many times has Iran hurt or killed American service members? And so, I mean, you know,
quite honestly, I've been watching a lot on this and I have not heard a case from the other side that makes sense to me or you know, outweighs what I've been hearing from, you know, Marco Rubio, who I think gave some really great
warned about all this in 2016. There's this great speech from him on the Senate floor about it was while Obama was still in office, before Trump was sworn in. And he basically said, if we do this nuclear deal, here's exactly what's going to happen. And it's exactly what did happen that President Trump has been trying to undo. So you guys are 90% in support of President Trump's actions in Iran so far. Rick said, should have been done back in 1981 once all the hostages cleared Iran's airspace. Then we should have been set to immediately pounce. We would have saved the world almost 50 years of misery, death, and destruction. And I will say, God, am I becoming a warmonger? Because I see those videos of them, like, blowing up buildings in Iran and where the Ayatollah was and blowing up planes on the tarmac and missile launchers. And I'm like, hell yeah. And I'm like, oh no, have I become a warmonger? I just love American firepower. Sarah says 100% or 1,000% yes. That country is the textbook definition of evil. Redneck Doug, overdue, but definitely needed. Now he needs to complete the task. And I'm curious to hear that from Congressman Smith when he joins us later on in the week is, okay, regardless of what you think about the action, now it's been done. So do we now have to basically, I mean, I don't think you can just walk away. And I think he'll probably agree that now you really have to finish the job, because now we've done it. We've got to finish the job.
I also think President Trump has had a history of not wanting to get us into wars. And I mean, he's been pretty vocal about that, has, you know, of past presidents not wanting to get us into war, not wanting to stay in these long wars. But I think that it's one of those examples. I do assume that the president gets a little more info than we get, even though they're trying to be very.
No.
I know. Even though they're trying to be very transparent, they definitely have more information. And and I believe that they are not putting service members' lives at risk without some credible threat.
Right.
And seeing it escalate. I mean, I don't have a lot of confidence. And if we had another Democratic president next, that they're going to de-escalate anymore. So I think this is him saying, I care about the future of this country and I'm going to take care of this because I don't
trust
everybody
else. Very unpopular thing to do during a midterm cycle.
Right.
It is. I mean, generally, Americans are very wary of war. It's a very unpopular thing for him to do. And I think to me, that shows that he believed it was the only option because he has been very worried about the potential electoral consequences that could just cut off his last term in office, because if they lose the midterms, I mean, he's neutered. He's not going to be able to do very much. And so the fact that he thought this was still worth it, despite the fact that Americans by and large don't like stuff like this, I think that tells us a lot. Mellon O on Local said, I don't know what to vote. I'm torn. On the one hand, we're told that Iran has hosted the most terrorists in history and therefore is a danger to our country's future. On the other hand, are they really such a danger? More so than fixing things here at home? Or are we just doing Israel another favor? Well, you know, I think this is, you can't, I don't think you can bifurcate it like that. I don't believe we can say that, you know, if we're dealing with Iran over there, it means that we're not taking care of the homeland. Because I think Iran does pose a threat to us here at home, and the border issue ties into all of that as well. One of the biggest things that President Trump did to protect our country against terrorism was closing the southern border. And we didn't have to leave the country in order to do that. So, you know, this is sort of an extension of that.
It does make me think about his State of the Union and that strategy of having the Democrats sit when he said, tell me if you think that, that America's safety comes first. And they sat.
Well, now and then they're all like, this is very strategic. Hands off Iran, like a place that'll kill and rape women and... It just is insane. Mm-hmm. CND Voss, I said yes, but I have serious reservations. My hope is that the Iranian people will rise up and take back their country and become a peaceful member of the international community. And when you think about the money that this would save America, for decades, the military assets, the military lives that it's likely to save America, if you can get the people of Iran to take back their country, and then it's not the largest state-sponsored of terrorism in the world, and that's significant. I also kind of wonder, what's China up to? China hasn't helped them out, you know? Mm-hmm. Is it just sort of like a friendship on paper? And China's like, nah, we're good, you know? So it's interesting.
I don't want to start anything right now.
Yeah, most of you supportive. I think if this drags on past a month, we'll probably try this poll again and see if people's perceptions of it have changed. All right, we'll get to our subscriber comments next. First, could all of this impact your retirement portfolio? I think that that is a legitimate question to ask and to always ask. You want to make sure you have someone managing your money who is consistently looking and staying up to the possible risks that are involved and associated with, you know, global events and national events on your money. And Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital are always looking to mitigate and manage risk. They have a strategy built around the fundamentals of value investing. They're looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So why not get a second opinion? It doesn't cost a thing. Schedule your Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Plus, unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk Podcast. All right, let's get to some comments from the live stream today. A few more on Operation Epic Fury. You want to join us again, Nicole? I figured you wouldn't want to stay on the camera during my commercial, but... Operation Epic Fury, Chris Parker. If Trump directly attacked Russia to support Ukraine, the commie left, who still believe Russia helped Trump in 2016, will flip back to supporting Russia and Putin. Yeah, it doesn't matter what Trump does. And also, if a Democrat were to have, you know, when Obama was in office and he put a line in the sand for Iran and they crossed the line, you really don't think if he had attacked them that Democrats would have been like, oh, don't do that. They would have celebrated him. And Republicans probably would have attacked him.
I guess we have to. I guess that's necessary.
It is exhausting, though, because it really doesn't. And I'm not 100% on the details of this with the war powers thing. But my understanding is the last time Congress actually approved a war was World War II. And there have been a ton of wars since then. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like presidents haven't exercised tremendous autonomy in these decisions. So there's just so much back and forth nonsense in that regard. Mm-hmm. Mary Mills, the Democrats are supporting terrorists all because of their hate for President Trump. They would completely destroy the USA before backing anything common sense that President Trump does. It's sickening. And they're going to do it after he leaves office too.
Better to do with their time? Go spend time with your children, your grandchildren.
Go, I'm just kidding.
Go touch grass. Like, get out.
I know.
Every week. Like, it must be exhausting.
Well, I've been there. It was exhausting. Hating everything Donald Trump does. Oh my gosh. And they're going to, but they will keep doing it even after he leaves office. They won't be like, oh, phew, he didn't, you know, take over the government like we feared. That's a good thing. Let's move on. No, they're now perpetual victims. Mm-hmm. And they're going to continue being perpetual victims. Deanne Sanderson, getting this Iranian regime out of the picture will also help stop the war in Ukraine if Russia has less Iranian oil. These same protesters used to be pro-Ukraine. But also, I do think that this is showing Russia that they are not, like, in the clear here. Mm-hmm. President Trump has been very decisively doing what he says he's going to do. So I think there's a growing pressure on Russia in light of the United States and sort of their willingness to do what needs to be done in the interest of national security and world peace. President Trump wants that freaking Nobel. So Russia, if he has to come through you to get it, he's going to do that. On the unhinged lunatic threatening Donald Trump and threatening to wear him as a skin suit, Kevin, this freak wants his surgeries paid for in prison by taxpayers. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. I mean, he will. Thankfully, he'll be going to a federal prison where they don't deal with that nonsense. They would have under Kamala Harris. On the Burlington Middle School attackers getting arrested, Sergeant Pickles, lefties only care when the consequences reach them personally. Activist judges are trying to prevent the FO from happening. And I think that in this case with the middle school girls, I think it's just the nature of how old they are. Like, they're not going to go to jail. They spent their night in juvie. They'll probably get community service. So I don't know if that's really kind of going to be the result of an activist judge. And more so, you know, I've heard one of the girls has a criminal history, but we're not able to access it because juvenile records are sealed. And so we'll have to get, you know, trying to kind of get some sources on that. But if these girls don't have a juvenile record, they're not spending any time in jail. But
hopefully this judge wants to make them think about their actions.
Yeah, well, hopefully, honestly, the Save most significant them. Thing that'll happen to those girls is what's happened on social media. Mm-hmm. Is their actions being seen by millions of people and being condemned by millions of people. And they couldn't just do it in the privacy of a locker room and get away with it. I think that's the most significant thing. My only regret is their faces weren't visible and we can't, in good conscience, put their names and faces out there. Because with minors, it's just a different thing. Michelle, so they're only being punished because we noticed? Yes. Yes.
Yes. I don't think, I mean... Yes, I don't think their parents were doing any punishing or they wouldn't have children that were out of control like this.
So. Yeah. Looking up for Jesus, most assaults arise out of hate. This statute is not applied evenly. That's kind of the point, is like, when you assault someone, don't you usually do it out of hate?
Right.
You know, and so I don't understand the hate crime thing. I mean, I believe obviously targeting people because of their race or their sexual orientation or whatever it is deeply wrong. But if you hurt someone, you hurt someone. Mm-hmm. I just don't know about the hate crime statute. I think it's weaponized too often. Mm-hmm.
I do think the Republicans tried to add politics to hate crimes last year.
Yes, they did. Right. And it got, I think that was Phil Fortunato who tried to do that last year. Yeah, good memory. On the Democrats passing the budget with massive spending increases, Robert Lawson says between these lawmakers being drunk when they got together and ramming their laws through on weekends and in the middle of the night, the average person doesn't have a chance. I agree. We might as well just drink with them. on the income tax, Chuck, because the unconstitutionality of this tax will be their basis for applying it to everyone.
I agree. Oh, they're going to say it has to be applied to all, and they'll be like, okay, we'll apply it to all.
The court
then.
Will say, oh, it's only constitutional if you apply it to everyone. They'll be like, oh, shoot, we have no choice. Mm-hmm. Good, yeah. Big Princess, the left feels pretty emboldened by the fact that the Washington Supreme Court is extremely left-leaning. Three vacancies on the court, though. There's going to be elections, so it's important to get involved for everybody to know the candidates, and when those start in earnest, man, we'll be covering those. Mm-hmm. On Republicans trying to save babies, again, Elemental says, never actually thought about it till now, how interesting it is that the left uses our empathy against us, but then when the right does the same thing, it doesn't work because they don't care the same way. I mean, those Julia Reed blue sky comments are disgusting. To me, that's enough for someone to be kicked out of office.
Right.
You know, I mean, that is genuinely disgusting. To all Republicans, we have to listen to them drone on about babies. What kind of person are you? I mean, I'm more bothered by that than Joe Fitzgibbon being drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Way more bothered.
Oh, yeah.
Tracy says, Julia Reed just used defenseless children as a pawn. She sounds like a five-year-old. If we don't give our millionaire tax, then I won't give you this. Horrible. Yeah, I agree. It's absolutely disgusting.
That's how much she cares about her constituents' feelings as well.
Right. All right. I have a really good closing sanity check for
I'm excited.
Everyone.
I haven't heard it
I
yet.
Know you haven't heard it. You're going to love it. But first, what a tease that is. A whole bunch of our viewers and listeners have taken the First Mark Challenge and just had fantastic results, saved a lot of money on their insurance. We have viewers and listeners who are saving hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year. We call them First Mark victories. First Mark works for you, not the insurance carriers. First Mark analyzes your current coverage, making sure you're not overpaying for the wrong coverage, which could leave you at risk for financial loss. So we don't want that either. And then they search dozens of major carriers to find you the best price and coverage. So should you ever need that insurance and reassurance, you can pick up the phone, skip the phone tree bot, and talk to a real person at First Mark. And in fact, I met some First Mark employees this weekend. Yes, and wow. They're so nice, and I can attest to the fact that they are real people. So they've helped thousands of Washington families successfully manage the complicated world of insurance and save them thousands, mine included. Be the next First Mark Challenge victory. Take the First Mark Challenge today. It's free. Go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So here I am just despairing about the state of the world and kids beating up kids over Donald Trump and a guy threatening to kill Donald Trump and wear him as a skin suit and just all this hate and vitriol and people out there protesting and mourning the Ayatollah of Iran. Just sad stuff. On Saturday, I was in Moses Lake, Washington at the Grant County Republican Lincoln Day dinner. I was their keynote speaker. And we're sitting there and it was a fun event, just jam-packed, talked to them about Donald Trump and all sorts of things. But at the beginning of the event, there was a group of kids that came on stage and recited the preamble to the Constitution. And I thought, oh my gosh. You can find sanity in Washington. Well, in Seattle, they're brainwashing kids. Out at least in Eastern Washington, they're brainwashing children to love America.
We, the people of the United States of America, born a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure the best tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessing of liberty for ourselves and our posterity through our day.
Adorable. I played the whole thing. It's adorable.
This Constitution of the United States of America.
I mean, how cute is that? Stop. In Seattle, they're indoctrinating kids in radical gender ideology. In Eastern Washington, they're teaching kids to love our country. A different form of indoctrination, maybe, but much better. And I thought it was adorable.
So cute.
Oh my gosh. And I don't even love the Pledge of Allegiance. You know, I don't like that. But they had to do the Pledge of Allegiance and my faith in humanity was restored. I loved it so much.
So well behaved. Aw, so cute.
I know. Anyway, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense come back. We appreciate every single one of you. We have a tiny bit more appreciation for our paid subscribers who help make the show possible while others freeload. If you would like to become a paid subscriber, it's $5 a month. Go to undividedpod.com. Just got a comment. Libs watching this are their heads are exploding right now with the cutest of children. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPOD.com. Click on the banner that says support the show, and we will be back here with you tomorrow at noon.